Welcome to the Relative Past podcast. We're a podcast about web development, web design, and that sort of thing. I'm Mark Phoenix, your host.
And I'm Ben Hutchings.
This week we're talking about SEO, and we are re-recording this episode because the discussion that we thought we were going to have when we originally recorded ended up being a little bit different. We were going to make it a procedural for SEO, but it ended up being much more interesting than that. So our guest for this episode was Elliot Richmond, who's a local developer and friend of the show, and here it is. So welcome to the show, Elliot.
Hello.
So we're actually all together in the studio, because we usually do these kind of things over Skype, so we've actually got Elliot sort of right here in the Relative Past Palace. So yeah, welcome to the show.
Front room.
Yeah. The room. Face to face.
Yeah.
So in terms of what you do in the web then, what would you describe yourself as? What's your role?
Well, my partner calls me the office neek, which is a cross between a geek and a nerd. But basically, I take care of all of the kind of digital web, from design right the way through to coding and stuff. And obviously, my background, I've got a history of being obsessed with SEO. Three things kind of, it's a nice little triangle, really.
Yeah. So, I mean, how much SEO do you tend to do sort of now in your day-to-day work? Because, I mean, is it generally sort of client work that you do at the moment?
Yes, client work. But my main involvement really with SEO now is kind of like manual on-site SEO.
Okay.
So making sure that everything's done, built with a good structure. I used to kind of do on-site and off-site, but the off-site is so heavily involved. And there are experts out there that can help you with that. Yeah. But also, it comes from within as well, but you have to have the kind of mainframe or the structure. It's like building a house. If you build on weak foundations, the walls are going to come crashing down, effectively. Or to coin a phrase, or to coin a scenario.
Yeah, yeah.
An analogy, which I'm really bad at, but as you can tell.
No. That's a solid analogy. No, that's good.
Yeah. So if you have that solid structure to build on, which is kind of, that's more my involvement now. And making sure that there's a vehicle for a client to continue with their SEO in a good, solid way.
Sure.
And then I can sort of discuss with clients that the do's and don'ts about offsite SEO and what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing, and things to look out for, because there's good and bad out there.
Sure.
So yeah, that's my involvement.
Okay. Because I think looking at your what's the name of the company that you're involved in? It's your one that you've co-formed, isn't it, with?
Yeah, so the company I work for is Square One Marketing and Design. Well, it's called Square One MD. It stood for marketing and design, but now it's kind of like Square One Web, really,
right?
Kind of thing. But we can't get that URL, so
you're sticking with now.
Yeah, you stick with what you know, and obviously because that SEO value and authority and history on that domain has been built up over the years, so it's easier just to keep that rather than start afresh and then point. 301 everything to it and stuff like that. So
okay, excellent. So I think I was having a look at your site, and you spoke about doing SEO reviews for clients. So what I mean, do you still do those, and what would
yeah,
involve?
We used to do those and they were quite heavily involved, quite time consuming, because there's a lot of research you need to do. Take the existing site and you can run them through various tools, which there are many available. They're huge amount of tools out there to do audits. But now we have a service that we direct clients to, and it's called freewebreport.co.uk. And it's a service, obviously, we subscribe to, use many APIs, and it draws in lots of information. Just punch in the URL and then it goes and does its thing, and then it comes back with a report that we give back to the client. So that's a kind of that's the thing that we provide as a sort of stepping stone to,
okay,
in order to make take the next steps for helping them out with SEO.
Okay, so when you got that sort of information, what sort of things are you looking for, and what sort of might you do with the information and data that you get back from those?
Well, generally, it's to see the starting point. What we have to do. Sometimes it's not bad. They've got a fairly good structure. Everything's set up correctly, and there's probably not a lot that we can help with. But we kind of stay in touch, and they reach out for some help, we'll offer some advice and things like that.
Sure.
But if it's really bad, then we can make recommendations. If it's a WordPress site, we can give them recommendations on what improvements they can make. Sometimes, the description tag's not there, or okay, it says just another WordPress blog, you know, simple things like that, or generally just adding more content and things like that. So it's kind of like a snapshot of what's going on, and then tell them what they need to do.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So it's something you're still sort of actively involved in with.
Yeah, touch on it, okay. And it's more of a consultancy thing because it's so involved, and I kind of dip in and just listen to what's going on in the kind of SEO world because it changes so much.
It's, yeah, yeah. So it's not your main focus, but it's something which is kind of involved in the projects that you do.
Yeah.
Okay. So this one, we'll take a little step back then, because as we mentioned in the introduction, there's quite a lot of sort of strong feelings about sort of SEO sort of in the web community, and one of the things that we one of the articles that we looked at before we thought about doing the episode was one written by Paul Boag, who, you know, has quite strong opinions on things. Yeah. And it's from a little while ago. It's from 2002, and it was called The Inconvenient Truth About SEO in Smashing Magazine. And his basic sort of, to kind of condense his words down, he was just kind of questioning the value of SEO and sort of wondering whether it's a thing we shouldn't sort of be so focused on. And he mentioned sort of a number of things about like why you shouldn't be optimizing for search engines and things like that. So I think you had a look at the article as well, didn't you?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, do you have any thoughts about that? Because it's interesting because he got a response from somebody who was an SEO professional. And I think he released another article which was a little bit more
moderate.
Yeah, a little bit more moderate. So, I mean, what was your take on that from someone who's kind of, you know, who's kind of has been involved in it?
I think what he said made a lot of sense in some respects, but obviously you've got to tread very carefully because it is an industry that you can upset a few people, and especially professionals who do know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And maybe his content just came across as a little bit, I don't know, misworded, I guess.
Bit dismissive maybe, or
dismissive because he probably didn't he touched on the surface and didn't really go deeper into the actual nitty-gritty of SEO and what that actually means. But I think he was right in the sense that he says it's about, you know, getting experts internally to talk about your business and your content, and it is about content strategy, and if you don't know what you're talking about, can sometimes come across you know, you're hiring somebody to talk about your business. But then again, there are people that should be doing that. So you need, I'd potentially be dismissing people then. So,
well, it's interesting because I think it's, why do you think people have that kind of idea about SEO? Because I think it's, I'm just sort of thinking about my own attitude towards it. Like whether, because I think, because there's a lot of like black hat SEO.
Yeah.
We should maybe make sort of explain sort of what we mean by sort of white hat and black hat. I mean, how would you understand those two terms then, actually, just to sort of clarify?
Well, the first thing you need to do is to read the Google sort of guidelines and do what they want you to do. And it's about content for people and making good experience for people on the internet, not necessarily trying to get around the algorithms and make things happen that you shouldn't be doing, you know, get thousands of backlinks in a space of 24 hours. It's things like that, or trying to bamboozle the bots into believing that your content is about something that isn't, like, you know, stuffing keywords in the footers and stuff like that, which is a really old thing to do, but it was done. Or hiding content, you know, making coloured text the same as coloured backgrounds and stuff, so the content was there, but actually it wasn't there to the user.
Yeah.
Quite often what I'll do is I'll just take out the CSS file, and so that the page just loads as a completely blank page, just so you can see what content's there. And also it's really good to do that so you can see how you're structuring the site yourself. Yeah. So you can spot like the kind of black hat techniques in that way.
So there's still a fair amount of that sort of thing around then, or
I think it's legacy stuff that's out there that has been done probably by somebody who's using old techniques,
and just hasn't bothered to sort of go back and clean it up.
Yeah, maybe it's an old site. Yeah, maybe it's an old site. Okay, things like that. So yeah, it is out there. But.
Yeah, because I wonder if that's the reason why a lot of people tend to have a little bit of a kind of dismissive view of SEO, because they tend to concentrate on those sort of examples. Or,
well, it could be. I wonder whether also there will be others who have a bad attitude about it, and it's nothing. They don't even know about black hat techniques, but what they do know is about the marketing side of it, where it's not a, I got to use an example here. I had a call from a client a couple of weeks ago, a friend and a client who needs some work. And he said, I'm spending hundreds of pounds a month on SEO and the site itself really needs some work. We talked about it for a long time. And I've said to him, don't spend any money on that until the site is right. The structure's right there, you know, because he's got a like a Wix style.
Yeah.
Build
Didn't
yourself.
Google stop indexing Wix?
Yeah, I don't know if it was. Did they? I don't know if it was Wix. Really? It might be. It turns out after about 20 minutes of chatting, it transpires that him spending money on SEO is AdWords.
Yeah.
So because he's not, and I can understand, someone's told him that you're spending money on SEO. He's not. He's spending money on AdWords.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's not SEO, is it? It's paying for your. It's paying for adverts. That's.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you could say it's part of SEO. Tying in an AdWords campaign with a site, with content on a site and making sure that it's working well, would you say that comes under the banner of SEO?
I think AdWords is brilliant for sites that you're about to launch, so new businesses you're about to launch, so you're not going to get indexed very well
like a booster.
Within 6 months. Yeah. So it's going to take a while to get build trust. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's like a launch pad and it's very useful for that. But
for the last few years, he's relying on AdWords.
I've had several clients that get number one. They get, you know, they bid X, Y, Z or X amount of pennies to get number one, and they've actually optimized their own site for those keywords anyway, that term. So you just have to Google it and show them that they're getting number one spot in the sponsored links, and they're also getting number one, number two in the organic listings. You think, well, you don't need to spend that money anymore.
Yeah.
Or if there's an agency charging you money for it,
yeah,
you need to make them aware of that and stop them charging you for it.
So I think some people have got a bad attitude, businesses have got a bad attitude because they've been sold these services and it hasn't been a long-term solution.
Yeah.
Effectively, like, missold it.
Yeah, or things have been, like, mispackaged as SEO when they're actually not necessarily.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's interesting then, because I think when Paul Baug wrote that article, I think he kind of got a lot of, divided opinion, but I think a lot of people...
Hot drama.
Yeah, it was a little bit in the way. Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. You need a soundbite there.
It is a little 20,
24 they use. Dun, dun. That one.
Is, no, our budget doesn't go to that.
No, it doesn't.
So how important then do you think it should be to developers? So when sort of for us as freelancers, or if you're like a small agency and your client comes in and they're like, at what point should you start talking to them about SEO?
What you need to recognize as well is that some websites or some marketing tools are not necessarily, they don't need SEO, in my opinion. They might be, I don't know, sub-sites that run along expos or and they meant for gathering things. So they're just tools. So you have to take a step back sometimes and say, question, is this SEO, is this an important part of this project? If it is, then you can give advice on it. So I think from a developer's point of view, and a designer's point of view, it's important to know about asking those right questions before you embark on a project, without a doubt.
Mm. Okay. It's interesting because I think some people that I've sort of dealt with kind of tend to, I don't know if it's the case that, like, if you've got, you know, if you've got a hammer, everything looks like a nail. There are some people I know who are kind of SEO experts, and it's the thing they do. They sort of kick the door in.
I've not heard that. Like, that's a good expression.
Yeah.
I like that.
But they'll kind of approach it from an SEO first sort of point of view.
Yeah.
But you're suggesting that it's something which needs to be sort of assessed on a case by case basis.
Yeah, case by case. But there's a high percentage of websites are business websites, and SEO is probably the most important thing. So you have to gauge that from the client,
right,
when you kind of embark on it. But most businesses require the SEO and they do want to get number one for those key phrases. They usually give you like a ream of phrases they want to get number one for, which kind of isn't possible. You have to kind of like look at those keywords and say, what's your primary business, and then work on the long tail,
right,
and associated sort of content around the major keywords. And sometimes it's just the brand really that needs to be optimized. The rest comes kind of organically,
right? Okay.
But then again, those are the questions you need to ask. Is your strategy SEO? Is your business an SEO strategy, or is most of your business local business? Is it a product, things like that? So, and they kind of will define how much you need to spend on the SEO.
Okay.
And local business listings and stuff like that. But there's no point having, embarking on an SEO project to dominate the world if you're a a plumber in Gloucester. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So, and sometimes those businesses are on recommendation. So they're going to look for, I don't know, Pete's Plumbing, not Plumber Gloucester. So you need to look at it and sort of suggest to them, say, look, you've got a reputation over 40 years. People are going to look for Pete's Plumbing, not Plumber Gloucester.
Yeah.
You know, that will kind of come organically anyway.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of conversations you have to have and sort of decide and make recommendations on and give advice on, really.
Yeah. Pete's Plumbing is getting a few,
advertising
here. Congratulations, Pete. In Gloucester.
Okay. So when it comes to sort of some of the technical things that developers sort of need to do then, what kind of things do, like from a technical standpoint, the kind of the basics thing, what sort of basics do you think we need to be covering?
Well, keyword research essentially is the starting point, really. If you're going to embark on an SEO project, or you're going to provide that as a viable solution to, you know, if it's a big part of their business. So keyword research, then you need to know about how you're going to structure the site, what you're going to focus on, what tools you're going to give to the client to allow them to add more content, i.e. are they going to have a blog? A lot of businesses won't be interested in adding content. So you almost have to, that's why you have to do the keyword research and then suggest the content that they probably need to think about writing. Mm-hmm. If they don't write it, you know, get a professional in to do it. Once you've established that kind of structure and there'll be a natural kind of hierarchy, you can then start to, even from a designer's point of view, you can start to build a picture of how the site might look. And how you'll interlink content, so it kind of makes sense to a bot and things like that. And again, the developer needs to know. So from a design point of view, you may make decisions, but you need to open up a discussion. If you're not going to code it, you need to open up a discussion with the developer to say, you know, you may be worried about the structure. Maybe you've got two divs that have got the main content. It's not so important with HTML5 and articles and sections and stuff, but back in the day it was quite important. So if you floated something left and right, what was important was getting which element you were going to float left or right, because
order of
the rendering. If you've got on the left, if you float it left, say for instance, and you're going to read all the archives and categories and stuff, not such a problem, but you're not going to get to the meat of the content.
Yeah,
not such a problem now with HTML5 markup, but you know, it's those kind of considerations that's getting into the sort of technical detail. But I think from a designer's point of view, that you need to open up that dialogue with the developer to say that if you've got concerns, you may not know about it, but ask the developer, what do they think about it? And, you know, talk to people and get it done correctly.
Yeah. So it's probably quite a good, maybe a bit of a take home is that everyone should have read the Google guidelines, both designers and developers, because
without a doubt,
it's got a lot of information, hasn't it? And there are some real no-nos. And if you, there's no point proceeding if you've done that or you're going to do that.
Yeah.
And there are other things that they're saying, they're like quick wins. And I suppose some developers feel like, oh, it's not my problem. SEO is not my, I'm not an SEO guy. SEO is not my problem.
Yeah.
But what you're kind of saying is, it kind of has to be a bit of their problem.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, just going back to the foundation thing. If you don't start with decent foundations.
Yeah.
And you have to take the house down again, that whole journey is going to be a waste of time. So get the foundations right, and that's why the developer and designers need to know a little bit about it. And that's by reading the Google guidelines, because at the end of the day it's Google that everyone's optimizing for, really. There are other search engines out there,
other search engines are available
and they do have guidelines as well, but it's Google. Everyone wants to be number one on. So
poor old Bing. I'm on
who?
Windows. Exactly. I think I was because I'm on Windows, and if you search for anything in Cortana, then obviously it brings up Bing, and I'm a bit like, it's a bit like you've sort of ended up in the wrong neighborhood.
Yeah.
You'll be like, what's going on here? I don't like it. I'm a bit scared.
But years ago, sometimes you used to use the other search engines that are available to get a gauge on how well things are progressing. Right. If you were embarking on something, so like you would get better results, say from Yahoo before you would in Google. But it would be a good indication that you're doing the right thing. So carry on with it. But
Yeah. So it's interesting the kind of things that Google are kind of encouraging, stroke, sort of strong arming people maybe to do. I'm thinking particularly of AMP.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of AMP pages sort of pop up recently. Have you got an opinion on it or?
Yeah, I do. Generally, in SEO terms, is that when things are mentioned, that people that are involved with SEO don't necessarily know what it means, but you'll get information that comes out. So then, because businesses want to get number one, they kind of get a bit kind of scaremongered into doing something. So you kind of jump on the bandwagon really quickly, or it might be the next big thing that developers or designers or agencies recommend you must do. In terms of AMP, I understand what Google are doing, but unless you've got a website that's churning out information regularly and it's kind of news related, I don't think you should worry about AMP so much because, get your website ready for responsive and things like that. If it's a responsive website, you'll get found in local search. But with AMP, it's kind of it's geared up for news.
Right.
Banging content out quickly and getting it up there and read and indexed and in front of people.
Right.
In my opinion.
Okay. I mean, so do you feel, is it so then that like a lot of businesses who maybe aren't necessarily a good fit for AMP are feeling as if it's something that they have to start like implementing?
Yeah. I mean, I was in a conversation with somebody who runs a video business. I wasn't in a conversation, but I was kind of listening to a conversation, like a feed on Facebook or something, and they were jumping on it quite quickly, or not quickly, but to say, I'm really excited about this, we must do it and we must get on with it. But it's a business at the end of the day. Unless you're going to churn out content that needs to be rapidly served up, it's not really worth you structuring your website and rewriting it to accommodate for AMP. You know, just leave it as is.
Yeah.
You know, it's not your strategy to churn out news information.
So Pete Spelman doesn't need to go AMP?
No.
Okay.
Not in my opinion.
Stand down, Pete. It's fine. it's quite interesting because I think, you know, not that I read a lot of BuzzFeed articles, but I think, you know, you see BuzzFeed when you search on mobile, then it's lots of AMP articles or, like you said, news outlets, or I think CSS Tricks has got quite a few articles on AMP. I'm a little suspicious of it. I think it kind of seems to me a little bit like the old days where we used to build mobile sites. So you'd have your, like, you know, the main site, and then you build your junior version of the site. And it just doesn't seem, and it seems a little bit not quite in keeping with the spirit of the web to have Google
define what you must do.
Yeah.
Which they kind of do anyway. But I think that's their kind of mechanism to make the web a better experience for people.
Because it's their business, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like search is their business. So they want people to find things quicker.
Yeah. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing for everyone.
No, you're right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I think you can see what they're sort of trying to get at.
Heretic. Burn him, heretic.
This is the Google Inquisition.
Yeah. Is that a chopper up there, I see?
There is a back entrance, right?
Yeah. but yeah, it's interesting seeing what Google are trying to do because, you know, who knows what their motives are. I guess every sort of big company, their motives might be a little bit opaque to a certain degree. I think, you can see that they're trying to make the web like quicker because I think we talk a lot about how slow web pages are and just how the mobile experience isn't quite what it should be. And a lot of people feel the web's in competition with apps as well. So there's that kind of concern. So I don't know whether Google are just a little bit over keen. I'll be interested to see what the future of AMP is. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's... who knows? You can't predict the future. And I don't think Google know themselves sometimes. You know, they float stuff out, try it, and then drop it. You know, you gear up for it and they drop it after a few years and you think, oh, God.
I was using
it. You go back to the client and say, I'm sorry, you've got to redo your website.
Yeah. Oh. You know, all that money you spent.
Yeah.
Take it up with Google. Okay, so we're thinking about wrapping up there. So as kind of a takeaway then in terms of SEO, as I think as you already mentioned, Ben, it's kind of reading the Google guidelines is a good place to start.
I suppose for a developer, yeah.
But sort of but as you were saying, having a considered approach to SEO seems to be the sort of the best thing to do rather than to start
I think if you try and tick all the boxes, you'll end up creating a monster potentially, because to get tick every single box is probably not plausible. Kind of, you kind of have to read the, I mean, there's technical details, like, yes, you have to use certain tags and you have to put information in there, make it accessible. If you're roughly getting it right for accessibility, you're on the right tracks. I mean, I use tools because I develop with WordPress, and there's things like underscores, which kind of, there's a lot of work that goes into that to make things accessible, and it's kind of, it's there ready for you to get up and running fairly quickly. Mm. But I'm happy to use something like that because I know about it and I can read the details. But if you don't know that, then you should know it. So read the guidelines, build for accessibility in mind, and you'll be on the right tracks. And then when it comes to content strategies and things like that, then it's a different ball game, I think, different approach.
Yeah, yeah. At what point then do you think it's necessary to bring an SEO professional in? Then, if that's not, if you're a freelancer or you're a small agency and that's not like your strength, at what point should you be looking at sort of outsourcing that sort of thing, do you think?
It's difficult. It's when you've got no time whatsoever, I think. Right. I mean, a lot of one man bands, I think they can do a big high percentage of it themselves, talk about their own business and things like that, as long as they've got the right structure and the mechanisms to do that, i.e. content management systems and, you know, adding content in the right place, make sure they can put title tags in. Years ago, you had CMSs where you couldn't put, descriptions and title and metadata. Now you can, and there's tools that are there to check pages and things like that. So, so as long as you can... Sorry, what was the question? So waffling? That's a sign of me waffling.
No, it's good. You're getting into it. You're getting into a flow state. It's just at what point somebody needs to bring in a professional.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like you mentioned, I think sort of when... In terms of like technical things, I think, like you mentioned, there's a lot of tools that are available.
So it's when you don't have time.
Right.
And then it begs the question of whether you need... If you get an employee... I've seen people employ people and they run the marketing department, they're talking the right language, the same language as the company would. So when you can't afford somebody, but that isn't necessarily an SEO expert, right. But it's kind of on a scale of things. It's when you get a team of people and they can't manage the time to do it. So then you probably need to bring an SEO company in to help with that. And probably the $1 million answer to that is when you can afford it.
Right.
Because it can be expensive.
Yeah.
But I think the expense, you do your research, make sure you've got a good company. I've seen good companies. I've worked with good companies that know what they're doing. They pull me up on some of the things that I've missed, and you know, I'm happy to work with them on that, and glad that they've spotted these things. And that's a sign to me that they're a good company. Yeah. So when you can't manage to do it yourself, and when you can afford it, really.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. It makes perfect sense. I think that might be a good place to wrap up then. So in conclusion, there are tools available out there that can help you to make sure that your SEO sort of is squared away. And there are good people, good organizations, people who know what they're doing, who can help you with it. And so I think for us as developers, as we mentioned again, sort of being familiar with what Google needs you to do, I guess we'll go a long way to help you to identify what we need to do and to assess what other people are doing to make sure that, you know, if you do have to bring somebody in, that they're trustworthy.
And Elliot's point about building for accessibility.
Yeah.
Building to make things sort of semantically logical is the way that Google are trying to refine more and more and more their algorithms to work, aren't they? To be effectively as though a human is searching for this.
Yeah.
So if you make it work for humans.
Yeah, I mean, even the algorithms are, you know, what was it, Hummingbird, it was geared up for listening, recognizing language and the way punctuation, not punctuation, but grammar is spoken, things like that. So, and there's a few algorithms that do all sorts of things, but I won't go into too much detail on those. Mm. But yeah, I think, like you say, as long as if you're gearing up for accessibility, you're on the right track, without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. Build for people, not for search engines.
Yeah. The content as well, you know, speak the language that people understand. When you start bunging in, you know, masses of content and repeating yourself, people don't want to read that.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I think, what is it? It's 300 words or 500 words is the kind of good minimum focus, or in terms of content on a page around a keyword or key term. Sometimes you get better results with 150 words, not from an SEO point of view, but from an engagement point of view.
Right.
And that's in, you know, that's indicative of, is that the right? Yeah. Did I get there?
Yeah.
Of how pages can work if you speak the language to people. You know, that's just the, that's what Google's trying to do.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I think Google's just trying to give you the results that you want to make sure that, you know, searches are giving you meaningful results. So,
yeah, and also the content as well is important. It's about making it useful. You know, if it's not useful, and that's classic things like white papers, useful tools make people come back. They'll share that content because it's useful, because they've got some stats or something, reports. You know, those are the useful bits of information, but sometimes get buried if they're not. You know, if it's a link in a PDF.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's not very SEO friendly.
Can we really quickly touch on, really quickly, social media and the effect that social media has? Because we were going to ask whether what you thought the effect that tying in social media accounts had with SEO.
Yeah, I think, well, it's like being in different rooms, isn't it? But it's about the chatter. I think people misunderstand how to use it really well. And I don't. It's not about how many times you can get your link out there, because you have to engage in certain rooms, and that again is why your content needs to be useful to people. So if you are going to share it and talk to people about it, and they're going to read it and find it useful, they're going to reshare it, and so it's the amount of chatter that's going on around the room that to me, I think, is what social signals means to Google, not necessarily having a Twitter account and having a user pump out all that information. You know, that's not a social signal to me. Social signal is how far it reaches and how many people it touches across different accounts.
Okay.
I don't know the algorithms, but that's what I think. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. Whether there's a point in it, really, in not just from a personal point of view. A person might like to follow a company on Instagram just to see what that company's doing. But is that Instagram account actually helping from a search engine ranking positioning point of view? Is it?
I don't know. I'm just wondering. I don't think it does necessarily, but what it does is it's optimizing your potential to be reshared, and you're optimizing your chances to be
it's like your real world
exposed
sort of footprint as opposed to your.
Yeah, but they'll, without a doubt, they'll use those signals for, you know, making judgment on, or who knows what the algo does, but
yeah.
They'll almost certainly be using, you know, 500 people have shared this on Twitter.
Yeah.
This is interesting. So
yeah,
that's going to be more interesting than somebody that's been shared 5 times.
Yeah.
So I guess what Google is trying to do is just discover what's of interest to people. So I think sometimes maybe using social media tools with the object of trying to improve your search engine ranking might be the wrong approach. Maybe using your social media tools to actually reach actual people. Because I guess that's what we're trying to do in the end. Like if you're trying to get to high positions in search engines, you just want people to see your stuff.
It's going to encourage sort of backlinking and things like that, isn't it? But in terms of what it uses, how it works it out, in terms of the ranking, who knows? It might be a small percentage, it might be a big percentage, but if you don't do it, you're going to miss out on it.
Yeah.
Effectively.
We'll put some links in the show notes then to try and sort of sum up some of the things that we've covered. I think as we discovered with SEO, it's quite a broad subject. There's a lot to consider. But in terms of sort of our approach to it as developers and sort of as agency, again, it's good to sort of have a sort of people focused approach and kind of approach the SEO as a tool to get you somewhere rather than to make it the be all and end all as it can sometimes be, and I think maybe that's what kind of makes people a little bit kind of antsy about it. So
yeah, scaremongery.
Yeah. Okay. We'll wrap up there.
Okay. Okay. So that brings us to the Toolstar section, and you've got something you want to share with us, haven't you, Mark?
I have many things. So as we've just been talking about social media, mine's a social media tool. It's instafeed.js. And it's a JavaScript sort of library plugin thing that you can use to pull in an Instagram feed. So I've been building a site for Kate, my wife, who is an artist, and she's a moderately keen Instagrammer. But we just wanted a Instagram feed in the footer. And so I was looking around for tools to do it. And because Instagram have been kind of, you know, pulling the wires a little bit, it seems to be a source of frustration trying to get a plugin, particularly in WordPress or sort of any kind of client to put in an Instagram feed. And we had a little exchange on Twitter with a couple of former guests on the show who were wringing their hands about sort of how tricky it's become with Instagram as they've changed their API. So a lot of things that worked don't work anymore. But this one works just fine. It's basically, it's quite a small little library just written in vanilla JavaScript. And it makes it very, very easy to bring an Instagram feed into your site. You just need your access token or client ID, and it gives some instructions on how to obtain those. So it took me an hour to implement it. And for sites where somebody has a very active Instagram, it's quite useful for someone to come on site and to sort of to go to your Instagram, because it does improve engagement. And I think, again, talking about SEO, that's one of the things that is good. That's what you're trying to do in the end. You're just trying to get people to engage with your stuff. It's been tricky trying to get Instagram stuff to work.
Yeah, Elliot, what was your plugin? It was Instagrabagram, was it?
Yeah, Instagrabagram.
Is that?
Yeah.
Have you just
backed? It's still out there because you can still use it. If you authenticate, you have to re-authenticate it before it just worked seamlessly. But at the point they cut it off or they changed the API, there was warnings about it. You had to re-authenticate it. If you do that as a single user, it's fine. But if you've got multiple, if you want to get a feed of a hashtag, generally, it will fail if you've got multiple users. If you re-authenticate it yourself, it's fine. But if you've got multiple users, it won't work.
Right.
Okay, so the idea is if you want to bring in a hashtag and lots of people have been hashtagging their feeds and they've got images with that hashtag, in the past you could bring them all in.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of...
more protected, I guess. So I guess they've done it because of protecting brands and things like that.
I thought it was because Facebook wanted people to end up thinking the internet was Facebook and basically bring in everything and all their brands.
Maybe you're right.
It just seems sometimes it seems to be a bit like that.
Yeah. What is that red dot?
Channeling and narrowing.
Also, red dot just appeared on your forehead. I think that's it with quite a few people who have like made careers and things on Instagram. I think when Facebook bought Instagram, there's a lot of concern about what Facebook are going to do. And you can see
shudder.
And there's a lot, you know, Instagram has changed a lot and is still changing because, you know, I mean, it's a free tool. So you can understand that, you know, there's a lot of developers who are working on it. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with them wanting to make money and to turn it into something profitable. But however, a lot of people are thinking, oh, did it have to be Facebook?
Yeah, they are. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Couldn't it have been Ming the Merciless or Darth Vader? Or somebody
not so bad.
Exactly.
Back to the tool. It's, again, Instafeed.js.
Just out of interest, did you have to hard code the access tokens and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You do. So it's not... So I think it is single user, so you wouldn't be able to use it to bring in hashtags for multiple users.
Yeah.
But it works just fine.
Yeah. Which is fine, I guess, for single use, but there's a high percentage of chance that you're going to need multiple users, or you're going to want to use a hashtag that's, I don't know, that is a brand that you need hundreds of people, you need a feed from, but like you can't do it. Won't let you do it.
Pain. Wait to see what Mark Zuckerberg has up his sleeve. Okay, that's our tool star.
Okay, cool.
Jukebox.
Yeah.
We're going to add some tracks to the Relative Paths playlist. And Ben, do you want to go first?
I do. This is
go
new.
Go first then.
This is like shiny, fresh, new. Still drying paint on it. It's called Flow, and it's by Sun Glitters, featuring Nadine Carina, and it was released on the 11th of November. So it's this month.
Well, an actual new one. We're not going to go down a little kind of whirlpool of nostalgia. Like
I normally do, don't I? Yeah. So, and I was just searching through Spotify, you know, trying to follow stuff, just looking for new stuff, because sometimes that can be a problem. Is you know, I've got a load of stuff I love and a load of stuff on our playlist I love, but it's just nice to listen to something new. Mm. And this is a producer from Luxembourg, and it's featuring this Nadine, who's from Switzerland, and both of them are into kind of electronic music, but she's got very almost like sort of breathless vocals, sort of hard to explain, little bit sort of Sigur Rós style. Okay. I can't explain that very well, but you'll hear what I mean in a minute. And I just quite liked it.
Why don't you just describe the whole track in words?
Yeah, describe it anyway, beat by beat, bar by bar. Yeah, exactly. The album is called SGXNC, which presumably is Sun Glitters X Nadine Carina. I might, you know, truncate this description. And it's a nice track, and I think it can sit on our original jukebox, even though it's got some vocals. They're so subtle.
Really?
Yeah, we'll see if you allow it.
You're playing a dangerous game.
You can veto one a year, you know.
Okay, should we have a listen?
Yep.
So that was Ben's track. So, Elliot, you have one for us, don't you?
Yeah, I guess I'm filling the nostalgia slot, which is quite an old tune, I think, which is Melt by Left Field. I just love that old kind of analogy synth offbeat rhythmic thing. I've got a lot of that in my in a lot of my Spotify playlists. So if it's got an offbeat hook, I love it. But yeah, that's an old favourite. So that's my offering.
I went to see Left Field twice, and I wasn't that fond of the albums, but the two gigs I went to are two of the best gigs I've ever been to. The first time I saw Left Field, it was so loud that my ears were ringing for about 3 or 4 days afterwards, really loudly, and kind of haven't stopped ringing since. But it was the actual friendliest gig I've ever been to, because you know normally it's a bit of a scrap to get down to the front. I remember me and my mate, we went there, and we sort of, you know, when the crowd starts to get a bit dense, we sort of stood at the back of the crowd, and then this guy just turned around and said, "Oh, do you want to go past?" And we looked at each other and we were a bit like, "Okay," and we just sauntered our way right to the front with people just letting us go through. And when gigs are sort of underway and it gets a bit hot, sometimes like the bouncers will hand water over, and most gigs it's usually a scrap and it gets slapped out of like the hands and it goes everywhere. But at Left Field, the person at the front would take the cups and hand them around like it was some kind of coffee morning. So whilst this kind of incredibly loud music is playing in the background, but it was amazing. But anyway, but we'll have a little listen, shall we?
Three of us love that track. Now, Mark, the pressure's on. What have you got for us?
Ben always has this slightly like disapproving stroke concerned look whenever I'm picking my tracks. I think I've kind of painted myself into a sort of medieval fair stroke brassy kind of corner. But I'm going kind of old school, well, electronic old school. This is a track by Okra, and it's called REM Sleep Research. I don't know anything about the artist. There's something about electronic music I find that I really love the music, but I'm not terribly interested sometimes in the people behind it. I don't know if it's because of Boards of Canada, because I'm really fond of Boards of Canada. They like really open me up to sort of this kind of electronic music, and they don't really give a lot of information about themselves. They don't do many interviews. They're not really that present on social media and things like that. So I found that I kind of really got into the music, and the kind of music that I was buying when I was young was like a lot of white label stuff, and you wouldn't necessarily know much about the people behind it, particularly if you're into like sort of rave music and stuff like that, as I was. So I find with a lot of electronic music, I really like it, but I just don't feel that interested in kind of digging into
it. You've been conditioned not to research it into it or whatever, because they've not been so prolific in promoting themselves.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm sort of... and also, like, I find if I don't like the person who produces the music, then I go off the music. And if I really like something...
Right, so you don't find out about them just in case they're something you don't like.
Just in case they're dreadful and I have to stop liking it. But wow. I'm not saying that Oka's dreadful, of course. It's probably lovely. But anyway, so this is my track, REM Sleep Research. We've just been having a little off-air behind-the-scenes chat, and we were wondering whether that track was actually something to do with going to sleep, because you were mentioning a radio station called Brain FM, Elliot?
Brain.fm. Just hearing it kind of reminded me of that service, which is a concentration focus kind of website that plays music for 2 hours, I think. You set it running, but you can set your moods, so you can set concentration, relaxation, sleep, meditation, and there's different categories as well, like film, underwater, rain. Wow. I think there's research behind that white noise thing to help people concentrate. So quite often I'll put it on and listen to the electronic category.
Okay.
But there's some interesting stuff in there. It's that track reminded me of it. So
imagine if you got it wrong and sort of wiped yourself. NLP
style. There's a reset.
Yeah, there's no disclaimer on the site that says claims it does that.
So. What's this Jason Bourne station? Let me have a listen to this. okay, well, that's interesting. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, shall we? Because I think I actually got that track off the Spotify, like electronic concentration playlist. So yeah, maybe something to do with that.
Okay.
Anyway, that's our show. Thank you very much for joining us, Elliot.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. If people wanted to follow you on social media, how would they do that? And have you got anything happening that you'd like to mention?
Nothing happening per se, I don't think. I'll probably get lynched by my partner for not mentioning something. But anyway, on Twitter, you can find me at Elliot Richmond, or Instagram, which is E-I Richmond, I think. And then Facebook, I'm on there, but I'll keep it private because you don't want to hear my rants on about football and stuff like that.
Okay.
And what you shouldn't be doing with SEO.
Is the I in Ignacio my middle, or something?
No, it's my middle name.
Okay.
Ian.
Fine.
It's not too embarrassing.
I was hoping it was like really embarrassing.
No, it's really boring. Sorry.
Igneous rock.
Yeah, exactly.
So thanks for joining us. This episode will be on our website, relativepaths.uk, with a comment thread. So if there's anything you'd like to add to the discussion, please come along and leave us a comment or two. We are Relative Paths on Twitter, Relative Paths on Instagram, Relative Paths on Evil Facebook, and all the other social platforms. So come and say hi. As we always mention, reviews are really useful. Leave us a review on iTunes, particularly US iTunes. Pretty keen to get reviews from our American cousins. They do help more people to find the show. And that's it, really. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back in your ears in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Cheers.